Well, welcome to our special extra features movie review Christmas special, our second of our holiday specials for the year, and our last. And unless we do a New Year's one.
No.
But no, no New Year's one?
No, okay. Not this year. Next year.
Just New Year's Eve.
Yes. And thank God it's over special. How are you guys? I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon, and I'm rocking Santa Claus Conquers the Martians that everybody needs to see every year because it has the best Christmas line of all times. When Mrs. Claus finds out the TV crew's coming to interview her husband, oh, my God, my hair, and runs off screen. You just can't beat that in a Christmas film.
I'm Daniel. I don't know how to follow that.
I'm Doug, and I'm wearing my ugly Christmas sweater today, so.
Nice. I forgot that. I knew it was a Christmas episode, but I forgot my Christmas gear.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
So, guys, I've been sitting here, and, I mean, it's that time of year that I sit down and watch really bad films. And, I mean, every once in a while I'll hit one decent Christmas film. Usually not. But the ones in the spot, one thing that has to be there to make you want to watch it.
Wait, so sorry. Can you go again? You broke up on my side. I don't know if we got that audio.
I had the same problem. It went kind of wacky.
I just want to know what you guys look for in a Christmas movie. What is that one thing you want?
Who wants to go first?
I guess I could go. What I look for is heart. I need to have a movie that has heart and love in it, I guess, is what I would say. Probably my favorite straight Christmas film, I love Bill Murray's Scrooged. It has heart, it has humor, and it has a Christmas message at the end.
Okay. I'm not picky. It could be like a DCOM. I mean, I agree, heart or blood if it's horror. If it's good, if it makes me smile, I mean, if it makes me, I don't know, if it touches my heart, I guess. That's a really cheesy answer, but I'm not picky.
I don't go out of my way to look for Christmas movies, so I have no demands. It's probably better if Christmas is not the focus for a Christmas movie for me, because I'm a bit of a Scrooge.
That we do know. I guess for me, it's the spirit of Christmas. I mean, with Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, I want a real Santa Claus. That's the one thing I want more than anything else. A Santa Claus I believe exists. Like, I do love the Santa Claus in Miracle 34C because I think the guy really exists. Like, you know, that feels to me like a real Santa Claus. The Santa Claus in this makes me laugh. He's big, fat, and jolly. That's what I want. And I also got to say, Charlie Brown's got that spirit of Christmas I want. And Charlie Brown is Santa Claus in the movie. So, yeah, I'm in for it. So that's what I look for, is a big, just happy, usually comedy, too. I like a little bit more comedy than seriousness. But Christmas in Connecticut warms my heart every year. So who knows? So, Daniel, you brought a big bag of Christmas films with you. Reach into that big sack of movies, and what did you pull out for us today?
Now, that feels like an innuendo, because the first film is Fitz Willy.
You reached into your sack and grabbed your Fitz Willy?
You grab your Fitz Willy?
I don't want to be here. Fitz Willy, directed by Delbert Mann, starring Dick Van Dyke, going on with the dick puns. Barbara Feldon, John McGiver, Edith Evans, and the score was actually by John Williams when he was working as Johnny Williams. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was kind of funny.
Johnny. Well, since we're starting off with my pick, this was my pick. I had never seen this film, and I like to find different films to watch every year, like reach into that bag of tricks for me. And I do tend to go for older films because I find they have a little bit more of what I'm looking for. I do wear on a little bit too sugary at times. I always see that follow the same pattern mostly. This one tempts. I mean, I thought it was kind of nice. I really liked the shooting on this. I thought that of the house. I liked the shots. Barbara Felton kind of annoyed me after a while. I didn't like her character at all. I just kind of wanted her to go away quickly. And I kind of like, I can see why you didn't make it as a film actress, because you're really not that good. Like, I think at 22 minutes and her playing supporting roles, that's really was her forte. Like, I can't see her as a leading lady. I think Dick Van Dyke tries his hardest to make this script work and work on the comedy, but I just felt it was a series of the same gag over and over and over again, no matter where they went in the film. I wanted more out of this. I thought the end was dumb. I was all into it. I love seeing Mr. Roper in it. His name I've forgotten right now. And I thought the ending was terrible. The ending, I was kind of half and half on this, and the ending just dropped the ball. I really think they should have played more with those people coming back from Florida and furnishing that house. I'd like to see a bit more of that, maybe. I think that would have been a better trend to go. I was disappointed. You guys?
Well, I mean, I was actually surprised at the cast. A lot of TV actors. I was reading up on the film, and it's one of Dick Van Dyke's first films after he made the jump from television to films. So, I mean, it's nice to see Agent 99 in something other than Get Smart.
Was this introducing her? Was this her first thing?
It was before, I think, well, I guess it would have been around the time of Get Smart, right? So maybe just before or around the same time. I don't remember what years Get Smart was on the air. But it was like the dumbest premise whatsoever. I mean, faking a lifestyle to keep the woman who owns their house and they work for in money, you know, kind of goofy premise in the first place. But the cast was okay. They're all likable character actors. The premise is, you know, anyway, it was, and I agree, the ending was dumb. The whole thing with the Hollywood screenplay and finding all the money and stuff. You know, just it seemed like likable 1960s, late 1960s fluff, which is why this is not a perennial favorite of anybody's. And then I think what the Christmas tie was just that it was set around the time of Christmas at the department store. One thing that did strike me were the number of people. After being isolated for so long, it's so weird to see large crowds of people in department stores and things like that. That was very unusual, but utterly forgettable film.
And speaking of all the TV actors, this is probably the youngest I've ever seen Sam Waterston.
Apparently this was his first role. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I read somewhere that this was his first film.
Wow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. The movie was fine, to use the quote from the podcast, but it didn't really wow me at all. It was just there. The story was kind of lame, almost a heist film, almost not. It just didn't feel coherent to me. Well, it felt coherent, but just not very entertaining for me, I guess I should say. Dick Van Dyke was charming enough, but not one I plan to revisit.
I liked it. I mean, it's easy watching. It's like, yeah, like a heist film kind of to help keep the illusion of wealth. Kind of amusing how they kept stopping the checks from going out and be like, uh-oh, you let that be cashed. Yeah, it's easy watching. I don't think I'll remember it by next Christmas. But,
I think I'll forget about it by next week.
Yeah, probably tomorrow. I enjoyed it, though, for what it was. I mean, it could be a Disney movie if there was a kid in it, but it's like MGM, right?
Who cares? Just
that kind of random movie I've never heard of that was fine.
Are we going to move along into our Santa sack and pull out our next gem?
Yeah, you want to cover up? We can see your stack. Can you cover up, Simon?
Yeah, cover up your Fitzwillie.
Wow. God, family Christmas podcast for YouTube, and this is what you guys are doing.
Sorry, fair kids.
I like noir films.
I'll do the cast first. Sorry.
Oh, you want to do the cast now? Now you want to want me to be quiet?
No, I just wanted to do the bit.
I'm going to let you guys on a secret that I've not told anybody yet.
Okay.
I just finished a Christmas list. Now, obviously it was filmed in July, and it's pretty evident it was filmed in July, but I'm okay with that. They have this scene where these kids run outside, and because the guy tells them, oh, Santa Claus, I'm a friend of his. And they run outside, and it starts to snow. So they have the shot, and the kids are playing in the snow all happy, and they do a pan shot to the left of the thing, so a wider shot. I can clearly see the fan in the bushes firing out snow. I was dying laughing. I'm like, really, guys? Nobody saw this in editing, this giant fan sitting there in the bushes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're in the bush. Or what film is
that? Right in the bush. A Christmas list. It's right near the end. So if you fast forward, people, to about the last 10 minutes, we see the kids, after they get their books, run outside. You'll see it in the bush, this gigantic black fan.
Okay.
Fair enough. Castless Blurs.
Yeah, Cover Up, directed by Alfred E. Green, starring Dennis O'Keefe, Barbara Fritton, Willem Bendix, Art Baker, and Anne E. Todd.
Again, my film, so this is my two for the list. Everybody knows, everybody got two. That was our big plan this year. I quite enjoyed this. I thought it was kind of nice. I thought it was built really well. I mean, obviously, at the beginning, I thought it was a little cheesy how they got together, but I kind of just let it go. But I liked the characters. I really enjoyed this at times. I love it, but I thought it built nicely. It definitely had parts of it that set me off on this and had me believing one character did it, but it was really another character. It kept maybe guessing what was going on. I kind of liked. And I thought the female lead was pretty solid. She didn't quite play the girly girl, which I thought she was going to come. I thought her sister was a little bit annoying, but I think that was the whole plan of her. She was supposed to be annoying. I thought the parents were very believable in their thing. And I like the townsfolk. I love the sheriff. I think the sheriff is really good in this. I think they do a great job of writing. I think they do a great job of throwing you things you don't see. And I think it wraps up nicely. I mean, does it blow you away? No. But I don't think this film is supposed to blow you away. I think it's supposed to be a nice film. And I think parts of it are very well done. I like the shooting in it. I mean, it wasn't anything amazing, but I think it takes basic shots and just adds because they have good sets. They really do, but the characters bring it out. Like, the dialogue is good enough. I think the characters are better than the dialogue, and the actors are better than the dialogue, if that makes sense. So I think it's a solid watch. I think it's a film you'll find, go, hey, this wasn't too bad. A little bit of a delight for Christmas for me.
I'm kind of the opposite of you there, Simon. It didn't really blow me away, and I'm going to spoil now.
Go ahead.
One, two, three spoilers. The murderer is actually the doctor of the town, but the doctor wasn't really a character.
Nope.
We had all these other people covering up the crime because they knew the doctor did it, but we don't know why the people in this town liked the doctor so much that they were willing to cover up his crime. I needed more of that. I needed to know more of why the people of the town were willing to cover up the murder. One thing I did really like was that a lot of the score was actually Christmas music. I thought that was pretty cool.
Hold on. I'm going to go back a second. I think this guy, the doctor shot since we're spoiling it, everybody just hated him. And I think that was the whole point of the film, that he was just not a nice guy. We don't know really what he did, but it was probably pretty heinous for the townsfolk not to like him.
True, but that's all hearsay. Same thing with the doctor.
We just
know that one person was loved, one person was hated,
yes.
But we don't really know why in either case.
But isn't that the point of the film? Isn't the point of the film the cover-up and how they're trying to cover it up? It's not so much the crime, it's more what they're doing?
I suppose, but for me, I wanted to know why they were doing it.
I think we would see that nowadays, but I think when the film was made, it was acceptable not to tell us.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I said, I think it's a very character-driven plot for its time. It's a noir film. So I think they were trying more to go with a noir film, but not really giving the depth we would look for today.
Okay.
but I think back then it's just a passable film.
I enjoy that you guys keep saying the name of the film, Cover Up.
Well, they kind of do the whole time. You kind of have to. That's what the film's called.
You got to cover it up. I think I'm a Doug on this one. I actually think I like Fitzwillie more than this one. I thought the ending was kind of silly. Yeah, no, that's just me. I mean, it's easy watching, but it's kind of boring. It never really, really tickles my Fitzwillie, I guess.
Ooh.
Sorry. No, I mean, it's fine as a mystery. I mean, the acting is solid too, but it didn't really get going for me. I like the sister though. I thought she was kind of fun, a little annoying, but like just like, oh, like, hey, I'm peppy. And, I didn't think the woman playing the housekeeper could act very well, but when she went outside and burned the poor coat and the sister was like, Hilda, what are you doing? Mind your business. That was the fucking funniest thing I've seen this year.
But she's that typical, like, you watch enough old movies, they always have one old bat character in all these small towns.
Okay.
You know what I mean? The Miss Know-It-All. Like, they even identify that character. Oh, you had your friend listening in again, did ya? You know, on the thing. So, I mean, you find that in a lot of sitcoms in the 50s and 60s. Sure. This kind of character. So, it kind of fit. Is she a terrible actress? Absolutely. But she fit for the plot, I thought.
Simon, mind your business.
I don't really have too much more to add on this one. It was okay. I mean, I didn't love it. I wasn't drawn into it. You know, I did other things while it was on.
So, well, you
just
could.
To be honest, yeah. You're not listening, yeah. Yeah, it was okay. It was like typical, like late 40s noirish, you know, with everyone agrees basically to cover up a murder. So
here's my big question. Doug, you bought this film.
Yes.
You didn't like the film. It's pretty evident. You thought it was okay. You're probably never going to watch it again. What do you do with your DVD or Blu-ray?
Well, right now I just keep it on the shelf under C for cover up and
or crap.
Maybe eventually down the line, sell it to a FYE or some place like that that buys used Blu-rays.
So you have no problems getting rid of crap, then, is what I'm trying to say. You don't enjoy it.
No, not really.
Fair enough.
Before we move on, could I bring up a theory? Like I was just disappointed by the end of like who did it and. Like the doctor gets killed because of a heart attack. Does the sheriff not put the lights off with his left hand?
Yes.
Okay, because I feel like that was like a little hint without saying it. Like, oh, like because they look at each other like, yeah, we got him. The killer's dead. But like, I'm pretty sure it had to be the sheriff, right?
I'm positive it was.
Okay. Okay.
But the doctor's not a character in this.
No.
So we know the sheriff did it. The sheriff can shoot. Like, we know the doctor does shooting, and I mean, they kind of lead to the doctor, but like I said, it's a movie about cover-up. It really doesn't make much sense by the end. But yeah, I would argue that the sheriff probably did it. He knew the doctor. He probably killed him after the doctor died, and they waited a couple days to talk about it.
Yeah.
Here's a fun fact.
It's not a well-written movie, let's be honest. There's some a lot of issues with this thing.
So here's a fun fact. The producer of the film wanted it rewritten to remove the Christmas theme, apparently. Yeah. But Dennis O'Keefe basically, who also co-wrote the script, basically said, no, we got it. Christmas is central to the time period that this is set in and forgiveness and everything else. So no, it was interesting. And he ended up winning, but... One of those dumb producers that felt that the time period was not suitable for audiences to have murder at Christmas time.
Wow. That's kind of weird, because if we didn't do this one, we were going to do that Robert Mitchum movie I haven't seen, so that would have been the other one.
I was going to say, that would have saved me from watching this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, it's a movie, we got to watch them. Yeah. They make it, we review it. You know the rules.
Yeah. And he wants, the sheriff wants everyone to switch to smoking pipe, too.
Hey, I like the pipe, man. I love the smell of pipe. Doug looks like a gavel pipe.
Probably. I don't smoke. I have asthma, so.
I know, but okay. You just put a fake pipe up there, you'd be perfect.
But my dad smoked when he was younger, and he would smoke from a pipe.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Tales of the Daniel.
Go back. Let's go into. I don't want to say that. I was going to say let's go into to Doug's Christmas sack, but I've already said it. I'm so sorry. We find Enemy of the State, directed by Tony Scott, starring Will Smith, Gene Hackman, John Voight, Lisa Bonet, Regina King, I can't say names, Stuart Wilson, Barry Pepper, Jack Black, Jamie Kennedy, Ian Hart, and there's more, but I figured I'd stop there.
Oh, no, come on. You got to give some love to Jack Black.
I did. He was the last name I said.
Okay.
Perfect. And Jason Lee and Jason Robards.
Yeah, and Gabriel Byrne.
Since we're in my sack, I might as well jump in here.
It's well shaved, I got to say, this sack.
Jesus Christ.
It's also kind of old with Gene Hackman in there, but it was this movie I picked because I had just watched the Conversation recently. And it was my second time watching it. First time was decades ago, so I decided it was time for a rewatch. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, Enemy of the State's kind of a sequel to that, or Gene Hackman plays a very similar character. Let me rewatch Enemy of the State. First thing that I noticed, it just bangs you over the head that this takes place during Christmas. Will Smith is out Christmas shopping. The plot turns on his son sneaking his Christmas present early. That ends up having the video of the murder on it. It's very Christmas, so I thought that fit the bill here. The movie was okay. Will Smith is charming. He's likable. I'm a bigger Gene Hackman fan. I kept waiting for Gene Hackman to show up. He doesn't show up for like 45 minutes into this movie.
Oh, true. But it's a long movie.
It is. It definitely outstays its welcome. Regina King, I love her. It felt like the movie really didn't know what to do with her. All I could really say is it's a mild recommend if you like Tony Scott action films. If you're looking for a sequel to The Conversation, I'd say avoid this.
Okay. I'm going to start there. I'm on the opposite end. I've always loved this film. Rewatching it, I love this film. I think every character is well written. I think Will Smith is well miscast. I agree with you 100%, but he's well missed at this time. So they got to put him in. I love this film. I love the opening scene with Jason Lee riding the bike around and running around. They're all chasing him. I love it. I love the part. I love the way the story develops. I like how they drop plots. I love the part when they blow up Gene Hackman. I love this film. I love how this film ends. I have to disagree with you. It's a strong recommend for me. I absolutely love most parts of this film. I enjoyed this film the second time, probably more than the first time because I knew it was going to happen and looking for things. I absolutely think this film is very well written. I think the Christmas is perfectly dropped in here to set up the whole plot. I think John Voight works well in here. I love the choice. The casting director deserves a fruit basket for how well this is cast.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to have something to do. The whole movie, everybody seems to have something to do. I didn't want to cut anything. I know the runtime's long, but I love it. I absolutely enjoy this film. I recommend this film to people. I think it's a great watch. I have to fundamentally disagree with you, Doug. I think this is a really good Tony Scott film. Tony Scott's one of my favorite directors of all times. Can shoot a movie. You do not see shots like this. I sometimes like him better than Ridley, because I think he gets it more than Ridley. I think he develops his stories better than Ridley does.
Uh-huh.
And Ridley gets all the credit because he's got bigger films, but I think Tony Scott's got a great repertoire of films too. I think this is a great recommend film. I would recommend it to anybody to watch.
Sorry, and Tony's the one that died, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, committed suicide. Yes.
Okay. Sorry to bring that random bit into it.
All good.
Kevin, did you want to go?
Well, I mean, I didn't rewatch it. I didn't see it years ago. Unfortunately, I don't have a love of Tony Scott films like you do. I find that it's another Jerry Bruckheimer produced Tony Scott, over-polished, overwrought, overlong movie. I mean, the cast is young in this one. There's some great people in here that went on to great things. And it's somewhat prescient, and it talks about security and the NSA overreaching itself, all things that really don't like come into play 3 years later with 9/11. So watching this, like addressing this film 9/11, is interesting because it deals with issues that we've all had to deal with as far as security cameras and expanding intelligence and things that they can get away with. So that was fascinating. It was interesting to see Gene Hackman's quasi-revive that character from The Conversation. Will Smith is always watchable, so I have no issues there. And this is Will Smith, a movie star, right? So he's moved on from Fresh Prince. This is a huge vehicle for him. And he's good in this. I think he's okay. Like, he's funny. He's charming. You see a little bit of his life and running around. And he says the right puns at the right times, basically.
It does.
But he went on to do better films. Right? Yeah. Well, I don't know. No, they didn't write it for him. So.
Oh, it sounds like it was the puns.
No, they rewrote it for him. But the film was originally, they approached, they wanted Mel Gibson or Tom Cruise to be in the part initially. And, Will Smith apparently took the film because he wanted to work with Gene Hackman. And he had worked with Jerry Bruckheimer on Bad Boys. Apparently, George Clooney was also considered for a role in the film, but he didn't take it. And Sean Connery was originally the person to play the Gene Hackman part. So they made the Gene Hackman role more like his Conversation piece, as opposed to what it would have been. If it had been Sean Connery, it would be very different. It would be kind of like The Rock in a way, which was also another Jerry Bruckheimer film. Yeah. So, overall, I it's okay. It's a pretty average. I put it up there with other Bruckheimer films like Armageddon and things like that, Bad Boys. So,
I'm fine with that.
I don't like Bad Boys. I've never been a big fan of that movie, but
I like the first one. That's it.
Yeah.
I have a guilty place in my heart for all of them. Mm-hmm. Except for the third one. That one's actually really good.
Like the third one?
Mm-hmm. And no, that one's
Boys for Life?
Yeah, that one's ironically good, I find.
I can see that on your best of the year film list because there weren't that many good films this year.
If it was top 25, maybe. Yeah. But all the people you're naming, I should have just had cameos here because like everyone and their dad, including like Seth Green, is in this movie. I'm more with Simon here. I don't know how I went 20 years without watching this, but I loved it.
Because you were 6 when it came out.
98? So I was like, yeah, 4 or 5, yeah.
he wouldn't have seen it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've always known about it, but I just hadn't watched it yet. But I love this one. It's nonstop action. I thought the twists were good. I really love the development at the end with just like, hey, we want the tape. And it's like, no, like, and then they think that it's a tape of him with the union people and they think it's a tape of the murder. I thought that was brilliant. And just how Will Smith's character orchestrates it all. I thought the writing was good. I kept waiting for Gene Hackman to show up and I liked the whole bit with Gabriel Byrne taking the thing out of his shoes and then the real Brill following them. I thought that was, I thought all the tech stuff in the information, like the NSA tech, like prior to Y2K, I thought that was really cool. Had my intention to route. I don't know.
Hey, Ron, see, me and Dan were on the same page. Just me and Doug hate each other. It's kind of a good episode.
It's nice for a change,
I will say about the ending, I was kind of disappointed that Will Smith's only action in the ending was to hide under the table while everybody shot themselves.
Sure.
When you're going to see a Will Smith action movie in the 90s, you want to see him participate in the action.
You want him with a gun.
I can't remember. Is this Will Smith's first action film? Gavin, do you remember?
Bad Boys is 95. This is 98.
Yeah, Bad Boys.
Okay, so he could have been carrying a gun. I mean, I don't think Will Smith's character would have carried a gun. I can't see him carrying a gun in this film.
Well, he was a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why would he?
And, yeah, just what, like a corporate lawyer? Or like with the mob and stuff, yeah.
I just kind of nice to see Lisa Bonet when she actually cared about her acting. You know, I always thought she was a solid actress, and I do enjoy seeing her in things. And Regina King, like, I have to back up with Doug. Always good in everything I say. She's coming up. Always good. I wish Lisa Bonet would do more work, but I guess it's not going to happen for me.
Okay. Are we trading places?
We are.
Sounds good.
Okay. Let me just directed by John Landis, starring Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis, Ralph Bellamy, Don Amesh, and Den Holm Elliott.
I can't wait people sending emails telling you how bad you're butchering these names. And that email will be extrafeatures@gmail.com. Attention, Daniel.
Which name did I butcher?
Don Amici.
Okay. I mean, I'm too lazy to search up the name on pronunciation.
I'm out.
So I'll jump in here. I will be honest, I've seen this movie multiple times. I have no idea what their plan is once they walk into the stock exchange. I don't understand how it works. I don't know how they won. I don't know how they became millionaires and broke the two brothers, but I don't care. I enjoyed this movie. I love the characters. I will apologize for the blackface on the train. I forgot that happened. It has been years since I've seen this movie. I forgot Dan Aykroyd was in blackface for a moment there, and I do apologize for that. But this time watching it, the one character I loved was the chauffeur. Dan Aykroyd's chauffeur who becomes Eddie Murphy's chauffeur. I liked him a lot. He brought a lot of heart to this. Even though he was willing to throw Dan Aykroyd under the bus at the beginning, he comes around at the end and helps both of them take down the brothers. So all in all, I enjoyed this film.
All right. Who's next? Me? All right. I love this movie. I've watched this many times over the years. So much fun. Eddie Murphy at the height of his comedy career, jumping from SNL to movies. And of course, going along with Dan Aykroyd, who's already a veteran of Saturday Night Live comedy to movies, with the Blues Brothers and other films. Great cast. Jamie Lee Curtis. Wow. You know, there are a couple of things I noticed right away. That's it. That's right, though. You know, jumping from the Halloween series where she was the innocent sister, to this where she was the knowledgeable street woman, it's good. I enjoyed it. I mean, great cast. Don Amici and Ralph Bellamy are like the original Waldorf and what's the other guy's name? Statler and Waldorf or something? From the Muppet Show. You know, and they have this funny scheme to, you know, basically see, you know, is Dan Aykroyd replaceable? Could anybody do the job? Right. And I love, you're right. Denham Elliott is great in it. You know, just overall a lot of fun. They're having fun. I like it when they're pitted against each other and then they team up, realize that they're being had. And, I think there's another movie where you run into the two brothers, Don Amici and Bellamy.
Why?
Coming to America.
And they're destitute, yeah. And they're begging for change. I thought that was, anyway, I love this movie. I think it's a lot of fun. And yeah, unfortunately, the blackface doesn't carry over that well, now, but, it is, unfortunately, it's there, so.
Yeah, but this is early 80s when Eddie Murphy had that whole, with Eddie Murphy Raw, when he had that whole opening, an offensive opening, I think you can expect it a little bit.
Well, I mean, don't forget, Eddie Murphy had that great sketch on SNL when he did everything in whiteface, which was a lot of fun. Oh. Where he basically played up what it's like to be a middle class white guy in disguise. So anyway, it's a good film.
Okay. I won't be able to contribute much. I watched this 8 years ago. Sorry, Doug, I didn't rewatch it. I remember really liking it. I remember thinking it was really funny. With you mentioning the, stop shaking your head. With you mentioning the stock exchange, I have like little bits of them celebrating. Yeah, I remember enjoying it. I got to rewatch it, even though we've already done it on the podcast. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Well, at some points, because I actually did rewatch it, only seeing this film about for the 20th time, probably.
Okay.
But I hadn't seen it in 20 years. Does that make any sense? When we were a kid, this was the videotape going around from house to house.
Why?
And yes, I do mean video cassette tape.
What's that?
I was shocked at how much this looks like Blues Brothers shot. Almost shot, Landis shot it like Blues Brothers. It's like the opening shot, I'm like, that's Blues Brothers shot. The first shot of the movie, that's Blues Brothers. And then he obviously goes away for it, but I thought that opening scene was such a Blues Brothers shot, mm-hmm. and you could tell it was the same director right there alone. I think still remember to this day the joke in the hot tub. When we were at Bubbles when I was a kid, we used to fart in the tub. I just love that joke. That was made me laugh. I think I get the stock exchange. I have to agree with Doug. That thing is very hard to follow on how they win. I was like, what? I think because they were buying so high, so Aykroyd bought a bunch early and then drove it up and sold it all to them. And that's my only answer to you, Doug. And it's not explained, but that's my gap.
Yeah,
I think like the way this film.
They didn't have enough money to cover what they promised.
Correct.
Right? So that they were broke as a result. So everything was seized.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I think this film builds nicely. Like, it's constantly building up to the end. And, I mean, I have to agree with Doug also. That butler is most un... He never gets any ceremony in this film. But Dan Aykroyd does a great job as a straight man in this film. Like, absolutely phenomenal. And I love Eddie Murphy. He just carries it, isn't it? I had forgotten the whole bar scene. He brings everybody back to the mansion, has a big party. Completely forgot about that scene. I guess as a kid, the funny scenes were all Eddie Murphy. And them winning. Like, I literally could not remember. The blackface scene, did not remember. The whole train sequence. Like I said, the only thing I remember is them losing all their money. And I remember the fart joke, and that was it. So I wasn't going to rewatch this. You know what? I don't remember this film at all. Oh, my God. I had so much fun watching this again. Absolutely classic film. If you haven't seen this, what have you been doing all these years? I mean, watch Blues Brothers, watch this. It's John Landis when John Landis was amazing and could do scripts and shoot well. Jamie Lee Curtis is just a wonderful actress. And this proves again how good she is. And she doesn't ever bad. I've never seen her do anything terrible. Everything she does is top notch, and she's just great. So, yeah, strong recommend.
Sorry, question. Was the stock exchange being really confusing? Was that played as the joke that it's confusing, or was it just not well written in that aspect?
I think it's not well written, and stock exchange. I've never could tell you now how the stock exchange works. Yeah.
I mean, even in Wolf of Wall Street, when he explains it to us, I still don't get it. Yeah, so fair enough.
I find the Wolf of Wall Street very well explained.
Yeah.
I understood it after that. And there's that other film I'd recommend, the stock
Big Short.
Big Short was great because of the way they absolutely explained how it worked. But again, I'm not doing it every day, so I really don't care.
Okay.
Whose sock are we going to next?
Kevin's.
I think it's mine. It's a little wrinkly.
Do you want to, which one do you want to start with, Kevin?
Just Friends.
Okay, Just Friends, directed by Roger Cumble, starring Ryan Reynolds, Amy Smart, Anna Faris, Chris Klein, Julie Haggerty, Chris Marquette, and Stephen Root.
So the basic premise is that years ago, Ryan Reynolds' character was overweight, and he had a crush on basically the Amy Smart character. She embarrasses him at a party, and he leaves, and he vows that he'll never be humiliated by them like that again. So years later, we meet up with him, and he's now thin, he's handsome, he's successful, he works in the music business, and he's tasked with escorting Anna Faris's kind of dopey, klutzy, arrogant, up-and-coming pop star. And somehow they end up in the small town where he was raised again, and he decides to look up. I can't remember if he looks her up or if he just encounters her at the bar. The Jamie character.
He encounters her at the bar, I think.
Yeah, they go to the bar to look get food, and they just happen to.
But I think he might know she's there. I know it doesn't tell us that, but I think he has an idea.
Yeah, I think
he figures that's where his buddies are, and then he's like, "Oh, do you think Jamie Palomino?"
Yeah.
Sorry.
So anyway, it's just another series of craziness where Anna Faris gets wasted and his brother hits on her. And Anna Faris is very funny in this movie. I was surprised at how good she was. Quite a lot of people in this film went on to do other things. You know, a few like Chris Klein from the American Pie movies, and Chris McCatt was the brother, and he's done other things. I don't think he's done anything that's really breakout, but you know, of course, Ryan Reynolds, definitely a star, I think, in this movie. He starts to become the star, the leading man. And Amy Smart, I agree with, I have a crush on Amy Smart too. So, and she's a lot of fun in this movie too. So I liked it. And you know, it just happened to be Christmas time. And I think the mother too is
Julie Haggerty from Airplane.
Yeah, she's actually a lot of fun. Like, she has some good lines of
"Be yourself."
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this one where the Christmas setting works to its advantage, I think. Didn't have to be Christmas, but I think it adds to the. It's in New Jersey, right? But the film was shot in Regina and Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan.
Oh, and there's the guy from Corner Gas. I forgot to say his name.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It was his buddy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of Canadian stuff in here. Alanis Morissette makes an appearance for a second, and she was engaged to Ryan at that time. But
Was her scene deleted? I thought I read that.
I don't remember.
Seeing her.
She was a client, former client of his character.
Right. Yeah, they deleted that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was deleted. It's available as an extra on the DVD. That's where I saw it. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was all right. It was fun.
So I've seen this film about a dozen times. So that's why I was like, wait, how did I miss Alanis Morissette?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen it a dozen times. It's one of my comfort movies. It's just if it's on Netflix, if I want to watch Netflix and just have something as background noise, I'll just be like, okay, maybe Just Friends again. I think it's an easy watch. It's funny. The premise is definitely dated with just, oh, hey, look, a fat guy becomes Ryan Reynolds and then now he can get the hot girl. Mm-hmm. And then, but the competition with Ryan Reynolds and Chris Klein, that's kind of funny, with Dusty Dinkelman. Or Dusty Lee now. And Samantha James with Anna Faris's character when she falls over the thing and she's like the blueberry bit. That was funny. With the toothpaste. Chris Marquette, I wish he would get more roles because I like Chris Marquette a lot. I've seen him in a lot of things. I mean, he's not a star, but I like seeing him whenever he's there, and it's just the banter with him and when Ryan Reynolds is funny.
Was he in the Girl Next Door?
Yes, he was. And Invisible.
Right.
Justin Chatwin. And I think he has a role on Barry, that Bill Hader show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, this isn't a great movie, but I like it. I like it a lot.
Fair enough. I'll be honest, this movie wasn't for me. Like I've said before, I'm not big into romantic comedies.
Oh, right.
You look like a big softy.
That's just the beard.
Oh,
and I'm fat, so.
Santa? Is that you? Sorry.
I kind of thought that Ryan Reynolds was an asshole in this movie. His speech at the end about how her making him feel bad in high school meant that she owed him now. I was like, whoa, man, that is a bad look on you right now. That is not the way you want to go about this. especially not in 2020.
Fair.
So I realized this movie came out a few years before, but that was a bad look for me. I thought he was really an asshole when they played hockey and he started beating up the kids. I know that was supposed to be funny. That didn't come across as funny to me. That just came across as cruel.
Peak 2005.
But just not for me.
That's fair.
Oh, my turn? I get a turn? Parts of this film I really like. Parts of this film I absolutely hate. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah.
I just find it doesn't get off the ground. I like the premise at the beginning, and I just find it slows down again. And then it has a couple good jokes, slows back down again. I hated the last half an hour of this film. When they're trying to get them together, and I just don't care. Don't care if they ever they broke up. I just didn't want them to get together. I'm just like, they're going to get together. I don't care. Can I have more Julie Haggerty, please? Or more Stephen Root? Because they're amusing me. Or more of his friends making fun of him. Kind of like that. I liked all those. I liked the brother. I just was bored by the Ryan Reynolds, Amy Smart relationship. Never interests me at all. In any way. Didn't care about it. Didn't think. I wanted more Anna Faris. I wanted more of the supporting cast. I did the leads at any time during this film. Never liked them. Never bought this storyline at all. Didn't believe in this. I'm like, this is dumb.
So you never liked the Chris and Jamie world?
No, that was silly. Just big nonsense. So I was hoping it would be better. I never really liked this film on rewatch. I feel about the same I did the first time I watched it. Meh, it was on. Not great.
Okay. Fair enough. And I swear. Kronos?
Yeah.
Yeah. Directed by Guillermo del Toro, starring Federico Lupi, I don't know, Ron Perlman, Claudio Brook, Margarita Isabel, and Tamara Shenath.
So, this is a Guillermo del Toro film that a lot of people haven't seen. It's a Mexican film. It's right up there along with the other one with the kids in the orphanage in Spain. Named
The Orphanage?
Right. No, not The Orphanage. I'll look it up while we're talking, but anyway, this is basically a Del Toro take on vampires. And basically vampirism is created by a device. So there's a weird bug that lives in a little device that if it bites you, it turns you into a vampire. Essentially, you crave blood. So, the original owner of the device, dies early in the film. An antique dealer finds the little spider-like device, that gives him it basically gives him a needle prick that turns him into the vampire. And then, his another guy, a gangster, basically wants it. And, he sends his nephew, played by Ron Perlman, into this film. And Ron Perlman, I thought, was a real treat in this movie. And definitely you could see, the start of the working relationship between Del Toro and Perlman that would carry on into films like Hellboy and the second Hellboy and Pacific Rim, things like that. So, overall, the effects were okay. It's in Spanish, so it's so you got to be able to read. Sorry. most of it. No, nothing wrong with that at all. We love foreign films, apparently, here on Extra Features. So it's okay. It's well stylish. Well done. Definitely a Del Toro device with a little weird ornate device that does something unique. Reminds me of elements of Pan's Labyrinth and other movies like elements of Hellboy, things like that. So overall, it was interesting that he tried to submit this as Mexico's entry for the 65th annual Academy Awards and the Academy turned it down. So
why?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But they just didn't they didn't care for it that much, I guess. And maybe it was the fact it was a genre film in a sense, right? It was action and horror. I like that it ends on a nebulous note that the old man doesn't know quite for sure if he's been cured or not, but he basically is left lying in bed wondering if the sun is going to burn him alive or not.
No, sir. But the Academy Award thing, was this his first film? Or because maybe that was like, oh, we don't know who you are. I mean, if he submitted it now, they'd be like, okay, sure, Guillermo.
I think he'd already done Mimic at that point.
Okay.
And some other North American movies, so.
Okay.
I think this was his first. I think he did Mimic based on, I think it was the brothers, the Miramax brothers seeing this.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. This is early. So it's 1993. I didn't realize it was that early.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it was The Devil's Backbone. That was the orphanage movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love this movie. I thought it was great. A few weeks ago or a few episodes ago, we talked about Peter Jackson's first movie, Bad Taste.
Mm-hmm.
This is the movie that I would say, this is how you do a first film. Granted, Guillermo had a much bigger budget than Peter Jackson did, but I think Guillermo used his budget so well here. The makeup was fantastic. The set design was incredible, really. I mean, I loved the old gangster's suite where he lived that was hypodermically sealed. I loved the little intricate shots that he did inside the scarab where you see the bug coming back to life. You see the gears spinning. I loved everything about this movie. I thought absolutely my favorite movie that we watched for this episode. I would highly recommend it. I love the little girl that she only has one line of dialogue in the whole movie. And she says grandpa when he's maybe going to succumb to his bloodlust, maybe not.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I love this movie.
Yeah, fair enough. I really enjoyed it. I like any unique take on vampirism. And I love the little prop, the little spider thing. I thought that was really cool. Looks very painful. Yeah, you know, I like the look of it. I love any movie about like chasing eternal life. And I don't know if I got the gangster sense. I mean, now that makes sense that you guys pointed out. But I was just like, okay, this is just a sick man trying to live. And then he gets Ron Perlman's character was great. Just a big brute guy. I thought they're perfectly cast. And yeah, like you said, Kevin, like starting their relationship, like for professional relationship, I thought great character for him. Brutal. And, I love the scene with the cremation and, just the guy like, oh, wait, you made me make him look nice, even though we're just going to cremate him. And then he just gets out of the little coffin. I thought that was cool. And it's like, oh, you want to meet him well or well done? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of, I think the set design and money expense, did they shoot this in Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure. Oh, beautiful. Guillermo's got a unique sense of style and setting I do not see from any other director. I see this in every one of the films. Maybe Hitchcock had it too, I would give it to. But he seems to know exactly how to frame a shot every time. The storyline here is just brilliant. I can't give you any other thought other than brilliant. I thought Ron Perlman was wonderful in this film. I love the scenes with his uncle and how he hates his uncle to a passion. But in the scene when the collector, the grandpa goes to visit his uncle and how they change that room and have that work out with the book and do the discussion. And I just love this film from top to bottom. Absolutely. Thank you, Kevin. I'd never even heard of this film. Never even seen it. I'm shocked. I've gone this long and not heard about this film. This is a wonderful film that everybody needs to see. I love the casting. I love the setups. I love how every little piece of information they give us is used later in the film or had been used already and then started to make sense. Absolutely awesome. Cause I thought the first 10 minutes was kind of like, what am I watching? Where's Kevin going with this? Where's Guillermo? And it all started piecing together. It was like this ultimate jigsaw puzzle, and he framed the outside beautifully and slowly fills in the inside and then like kind of stops and makes you look for pieces. And you go, you get your box of pieces and you're looking for those. And then you start getting a little bit closer and then you've lost a piece and you're literally waiting to the final frames of this film to give you that piece to finish it off. Absolutely stunning film. I'm giving this a 10 out of 10, a perfect recommend for me, which I don't give out often, but I absolutely love this film.
I can confirm he does not get those out often.
there's a sequel.
No, I had no idea. Yes.
Yeah, it's a loose sequel. It's called We Are What We Are. It came out in 2010.
Oh.
Or Somos Lo Que Hay. It was released in 2010. It's not Del Toro. It's a different director.
Shoot, I didn't know that was a sequel because I've seen that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the coroner character from Kronos, that actor reprises the role in this movie.
Oh,
and that okay. ties it together. Yeah. But it also deals with vampirism and stuff, so.
Okay.
All right.
So, yeah, Simon, to your point with, like, the first 10 minutes, you don't know where it's going because it's like, oh, with the antique shop, it's like, could this be Gremlins kind of thing?
Yeah. I should have paired this with Gremlins. It would have been perfect.
Are we going into my sack now?
Yep.
Well, what is your sack like? Is it big, little, medium-sized?
It's youthful.
Is it hiding in the closet? Where do you put your Santa sack?
I don't know. I don't want to be here anymore.
It's red. It's red with white fringes.
Would you like to call your mom? She can come over and give you a ride somewhere and get away from us.
To quote Better Watch Out, I want my mom. Directed by Chris Peckover, starring Olivia Dijon, Levi Miller, Ed Oxenbald, Alex Mikic, Dacre Montgomery, Patrick Warburton, and Virginia Madsen. This is my pick. I will start. This is my fourth time watching this one. The first time I didn't love it because I wanted just a stupid Christmas home invasion movie, but this film had actually turned out to be smart, and it just completely subverts expectations, like sets it up as an outside force is going to do a home invasion on them, and then it's just like, nope, Levi Miller is a crazy, crazy little fuck, basically. I remember why I love this movie, because I think it's really well written. I remember why I don't like this movie, because Levi Miller he plays the character well, but with all his voice cracks and just how like toxic masculinity his character is, he's just a big brat. Like, he's up there with annoying characters, like the kid from The Babadook. He is super annoying, but I love how it's written. I like the little bits of dark comedy, like with the very brief roles by Virginia Madsen and Patrick Warburton. Just like, are you sure you've never sucked another man's cock? I thought that was fucking funny. sorry for the language on the podcast, but
yeah, language.
I know, but it's direct quotes. Yeah, no, I remember why I enjoy it, and I remember why it has problems, but I think this is probably the most traditional Christmas movie on this podcast because it's like very directly linked to Christmas, but I enjoy it as, because I wanted a Christmas horror, and I enjoy it as a Christmas horror. It's entertaining, even though, yeah, I think it does have a couple problems.
Doug, is this the one?
No, the painful one for me was actually Just Friends.
Oh, totally
now. Oh no! I honestly, rewatching this, Simon, I knew I was like, oh, okay, I don't think he's gonna like
this. It was okay. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I did have problems, like Daniel said. He's definitely a whiny little brat. And when you make the villain the main character of the film, I want to be able to root for that villain. I want that villain to be slyly likable or so despicable that you just want him to get away with it. He was just a little brat in this, and I didn't want him to get away with it. I didn't like him in any way, shape, or form. It was okay because it subverted what you expect from these type of films.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think I could watch it once and not need to watch it again.
Fair enough.
Can I go next, please?
Sure.
I would... It's going to kill you during this film.
I'll have the record reflect. The director is not Daniel Prine. It is Chris Peckover.
I don't know what? As soon as I saw the kid, I'm like, this is a Daniel Prine film. You always pick these films with kids and horror. I said, the pattern you have, I'm sitting here going, I hate this kid. I hate this film. It needs to stop. Somebody needs to put a bullet through his face for me to like it. I didn't like anybody in this film. Not one person amused me. Couldn't stand anything about it. It was so tedious, monotonous. I want to punch him in the face. I'm like, you know what? Can this babysitter just chair him and get this over with? I thought it was dragged out nonsense most of this film. It was. I almost had to turn it off numerous times. I didn't. I finished it in one shot. I hated it so much. And then the end of the film, oh no, one of them lived. I'm like, I'm done. If there's a sequel to this, I am not watching it. I couldn't take any more of this kid.
Okay. Fair enough.
I tried to like this film. Even find something good about this film. Hated every minute of it.
Home Alone bit was pretty funny.
No, it wasn't.
His
stupid friend showing up going, this sounds like a good idea. You're dead. I knew he was dead. Guaranteed he was dying.
Sure. Oh, for me, I like this a lot better than The Babysitter. I don't like The Babysitter.
Fair enough. Each his own. Babysitter's comedy to me, and I like comedy horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this is the dark comedy.
Oh, this is dark, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not too crazy about horror movies where the main character is the killer. And, there's definitely echoes of the Babysitter films, of a little bit of Scream, with the killers playing, being the, among the cast. I don't know. There were some interesting gags in there, but, that kid is just vicious, psychotic. It's like, what if Kevin McAllister grew up to become psychotic?
Exactly.
You know, yeah. And he did. Well, actually, he did. But but in this case, it's a different kid. But it's well reviewed. It certainly has an audience that loves it.
Oh, it has a following. I'm not saying it doesn't.
I'm not. Yeah, I'd watch Just Friends many times over this movie. I wouldn't revisit this. Friendly.
Of course, we got to act.
Well, exactly. I'd watch this more day of the
and
week.
And the babysitter didn't do anything for me, so I moved on. And her dumb boyfriend, like, come on, that guy was pathetic. I did like the hanging scene, though. I'll give that one props.
The guy from Stranger Things, yeah.
Was that him?
Yeah, that's the guy from the second season, the old stepbrother of Sadie.
Sadie
Stanley?
No, Sadie Stink. It's Sadie Stink's her name.
Okay, sorry.
He's a skateboarder. I don't know why I know these things, but.
Oh yeah, Sadie Stink. Sadie Stanley was a different one. Okay. Yeah. Though it's the same casting, the same pairing for that Shyamalan film, The Visit. Where they, I love that one more than this one, but yeah, that's the same pairing with the Ed Oxenbold and Olivia Dijon. Yeah.
Random side note. Got it. Are we moving on?
Yes, sir. Are we going to graduate with honors? Directed by Alec Keshi Sheehan. I don't know. Starring Joe Pesci, Brendan Fraser, Moira Kelly, Patrick Dempsey, Josh Hamilton, Corbidal Vidal. I picked this one because I remember it being set at Christmas. I remember loving Joe Pesci as just a lesser Joe Pesci role. I love the little quote, like, boy, oh boy. Like, I remember when I watched this, I watched this probably 10 years ago on the, I caught it on TV once. I wanted to see if it was still good. It's sappy. It's kind of schmaltzy, but, and it's like, okay, so basically Brendan Fraser's character, he Ex Machina loses his thesis and it falls in a sewer grate down into, a boiler room under a library at Harvard University, homeless guy living in down there called Simon, played by Joe Pesci. He finds it and he's like, okay, man, hey, you already seem like a dick, Harvard. I'm going to give you a page for every good thing that you do. It's basically pay it forward, but hey, I'm going to keep your thesis hostage.
Wasn't he had to give him a night's, like a place to live for 88 nights? Yeah,
he was going
to
give
him. Do something to get the page back. Every gives him a muffin.
Yeah, because like he was
a perfect glazed donut. He gets a page.
I want a donut and in underwear, and he'd get two pages. But instead, he calls the cops, and then he bails him out because he still wants his thesis. It's a slow movie, but I think Joe Pesci is great, and it makes it better than it has really any right to be. But I thought the cast chemistry was strong. I like Brendan Fraser here. I like Patrick Dempsey here with the rooster and all the weird dick jokes that he does. my cock and your bum kind of thing. I thought that was kind of amusing. And I thought Pesci was great here. And then it's schmaltzy, but I like it.
I'll be honest. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie. I did refresh myself by watching a few clips in the trailer to sort of remember it. Joe Pesci is very different in this movie than he normally is, in that he plays an intellectual and he's very hairy. You know, at times, his look and sound reminds me of Zach Galifianakis, in some later films that he does.
Okay.
As opposed to, you know, signature Joe Pesci, quasi psychotic mafia guy.
Sure.
Who does that? The role he had in Lethal Weapons where he was like a fixer. Here he's
Leo Getz.
That's right.
Get it, Leo Getz.
They F you at the drive thru. Yeah. You know, Brendan Fraser is very young in this. So you know, I could talk about another movie. A lot of movies in this episode had actors who were up and coming before they really became superstars. So this definitely fits in that mold. Moira Kelly, whatever happened to Moira Kelly? She just kind of faded away.
I think she got the Hollywood, she didn't make it syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she never had a big part in anything. I always liked Moira Kelly as an actress, mm-hmm. but she never had anything big. She never had that blockbuster film to make her shine.
Yeah.
So I think she just aged herself out eventually and just, I don't know what she's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody seen that?
I think she replaced Lara Flynn Boyle in the Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me movie.
Well, you would know that if anybody here did.
Yeah, she played the character that Lara Flynn Boyle played on the TV show. She didn't return for the movie, so Moira Kelly did that part.
15 years ago that movie was? 20 years ago?
Okay. I think 98, so 22 years ago maybe?
Yeah, so I mean, she's 92. Pretty much nobody now. You can't, who's Moira Kelly? Guys in the 80s might know who she is.
The voice of Nala, that'll be what she remembers.
Yeah, that's it. The Lion King, I know that, but that's about it.
She had a long role on One Tree Hill as Karen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let me just put into that right now. Let me get back to you.
Which I'm sure I watched some episodes of that when I was a kid. So
I'm sure you did too. But it wasn't for Moira Kelly.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I can't remember who the lead on that show was.
But she does, Chad Michael Murray, I think.
I'm just looking at her filmography. She does seem to do the occasional work on television, but nothing major.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So she got married, had a family kind of person? Is that what she said? The family last thing?
Yep.
Maybe she'll make a comeback at some point. Like the one with, what's her name? I cannot, blanking her name from Fast Times.
I know what you mean. Phoebe Cates.
Three name person. Yes. No, the other one. The one in the Quentin movies.
Oh, yeah.
She got a family and then broke up with the director and then came back. Doesn't matter. Well, Moira Kelly, please come back. I guess I'll pick up since I'm talking. Patrick Dempsey kind of looks like he's still trying to find himself as an actor in here. I mean, Can't Buy Me Love was his big movie, and then he's in this. I think he just bounces around forever around Hollywood until he hits his big thing was Grey's Anatomy. That kind of made him a star. I don't think he was anybody until then. I love Brendan Fraser. He's just one of these actors I really, really like, always. Really enjoy him in here. Josh Hamilton did nothing for me. I thought he was just sort of there. I mean, he had stuff to do. I thought they all had plots. I thought they all had something to do. They did this, they did that. I wasn't a big fan of Joe Pesci at all in this film. I thought he was very toned down. I didn't like his character. I know they tried to keep giving him heart, and we got to see beyond him being a bum. I'm like, I never thought he was a bum. He didn't look like the right type for me. I didn't think. But, I mean, look, he's fixing the van. He's doing this. Oh, I get it. He's better than this. And then when he goes to visit his son, I'm like, that's his big redemption moment. I didn't care by that point. I wanted to spend more time with Brendan Fraser's essay and him working on his essay and the people in the house that I did with Joe Pesci, if that made any sense. I wish there was more with Fraser arguing with the professor maybe a bit more, because I think that's where the storyline takes place. But I don't think they wanted to go that way. I think they wanted to redeem the Pesci character, which I don't think he needs to be redeemed. I mean, because bringing up his son at the last minute, I was kind of like, okay, wouldn't he have gone to see his son? Because he's supposed to be this great guy and this and that. I thought it was a little weak for the end of this film. Because, I mean, they show Joe Pesci. We're supposed to like Joe Pesci by this point. And now he's got to have a redemption. He had redemption. He fixed the van. He's making dinner. He went to get his stuff. So this is his final peg.
Well, he wants to be a better person. And
but he was a better person. The whole film, he was better. I had no issues with Bethany. I didn't think he was a bad person. So he kept the guy's thesis. So they need a plot point.
He didn't think he was a good person. But I don't think the movie was ever about the thesis. It was about Pesci making Fraser a better person, right?
But Fraser was a good person.
He was a bit of a schmuck.
Yeah, he called the cops in the beginning. He wasn't that great.
He wouldn't call the cops either. I would have.
But I think that's the arc that they were going for. Josh Hamilton's the extreme. He's a bigot. But at the beginning, he's like, oh, well, he's just a bum. I want my thesis back. He's so self-centered.
But he should have given the thesis.
Yeah, for sure.
He wouldn't have. If the guy took my stuff and it's my thesis, the only copy I have, I'm getting kind of pissed off too.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, then he stands up for Simon because he's like, oh, can he sleep at night? It's 1 degree Fahrenheit, and then he kind of attacks Josh Hamilton because he's an ass and he doesn't even want him in the cellar, right?
I know that was just being a dick, Josh Hamilton, but that's his character, right? Sure.
Yeah.
But my argument with Brendan Fraser, he comes from a poor family, kind of states that, doesn't really know his dad. He just needs to get this done so he can graduate with honors. His whole point is to be a better person for his family, to help his mom out. I kind of get that impression that he's on the way to be a better person. We don't need him to be redeemed. And Pesci, he's fixed the van. He's done everything he said he was going to do. We don't need him to be a better person. I find Pesci's just really there to fuel the Moira Kelly storyline, which we all saw coming by the end.
Sure. And I think it is just to show that you don't need to graduate with honors to be a good person.
Correct.
I guess. Yeah. And that whole thing was he'll graduate with honors in life. I thought that was nice.
Yeah. I kind of felt this movie was just cliched.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
It was lesser Dead Poet Society. Lesser any real college movie where the main character has to learn from somebody who doesn't seem like the perfect role model. It's something we've seen many times before. All the storylines, really, with Brendan Fraser and Moira Kelly, will they, won't they? He needs to be pushed into it. It was just cliched to me. The acting was okay. I have nothing really to complain about with anybody. But I also won't be watching this every Christmas time, or I won't be rushing to show this to Owen saying, oh my God, I found this great movie that you have to watch before you go to college. It was a cliched film.
Oh, I was just saving striptease for him before he goes to college.
Not stripped showgirls.
Oh, Showgirls. We're going to wrap it right there for him.
Yeah.
And Showgirls too, then. He's got to see both.
I didn't know there was a sequel.
There is a sequel
to Showgirls. Oh, really?
Damn.
Well,
yeah, that's what he's watching tonight.
Oh, there, yeah, there is, but there's no connection at all to the first
one. Oh, no? I've never seen it, so I can't say.
No, I've seen the trailer for it, so, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes, people out there, there are films I haven't seen.
Really? Wow.
Do we want to do any of the regular features on the show, or?
No, that's it. We're done for Christmas? So I guess before we go, and before I give our thing, maybe we should give one recommendation for a Christmas film, because everybody knows we did these movies for films we haven't done on the show. So let's just give one last film out that people maybe could sit down to watch before Christmas, because this show will be out before then. So, Daniel, what film are you going to recommend?
Just any Christmas favorite?
Did you not listen? Yes.
Well, I was just clarifying. Just one?
Give 10, whatever makes you happy.
Okay. The Polar Express. I love The Polar Express. Tom Hanks plays a bunch of roles. It's the classic. Watch it every Christmas. You can't go wrong with that one. Unless you don't like creepy animation, then you can't go wrong. That's my recommendation.
Mine is Die Hard. you know, it's not, there's a lot of debate over whether or not this is a Christmas movie. It's set at Christmas, so I think that's good enough. And you know, it's about a man trying to get his family back together at Christmas time. And so, I enjoyed it. It's a hell of a movie. It's one of the best action movies ever made. So can't go wrong watching Die Hard.
Fair.
Santa Claus.
A favorite in this house is Albert Finney's Scrooge. It's a musical take on Christmas Carol, and it's wonderful. There's a lot of songs. They're all bangers. You sing them all year long. It's great. I recommend it.
Doug's got his Yuletide festive brews singing away. besides Santa Claus Conquer the Martians and Miracle 34th Street, every year for years, I would go see my grandmother when she was alive, and we would watch White Christmas at her house every year. She used to live up in the north. So there would always be snow, and I always hope it was snowing while I watch White Christmas. And I would watch it again this year because I don't even watch the whole thing. I just put it on TV whenever I get home and just watch. And one last tradition I have that nobody on the show really knows, and it started with Kevin one year, and he probably doesn't remember. I went downtown to pick up Kevin from work and had Harvey's with Kevin on the way driving him home. So ever since then, every Christmas Eve, I go out and get a burger some random place on my way home Christmas Eve. And I've been doing it for about 17 years now. So thank you, Kevin, for that Christmas tradition. And if before we go, I know you guys are watching and listening, please email us at extrafeatures.ca and bitch about Daniel's presentation, bitch about me. Just say, hey, we love the show. And if they make it.
Simon eats it. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho,
ho. All right. Everybody have a safe holiday. Steve.
Merry Christmas,
socially
everybody.
Socially distanced, yes.
Happy
Christmas, happy holidays.
Wear your Christmas masks.